The open source model has spread beyond software to all kinds of areas of cultural production. And I think it's a very important model for cultural industries generally. New forms of collaboration in gaming, for instance. If you're playing online multiplayer games, a lot of the content of the game comes from the player. It's not built by the company. The company builds a platform, but the player defines what's happening there. Blogs, journalism, a lot of the content is developed collaboratively by users. So Sasson, Saskia Sasson, she's talking mostly about how governments, local governments particularly, might provide better services to citizens, how they might be more responsive about issues to do with, you know, fixing the streets or making better public spaces or providing better libraries or whatever. But I think we can broaden the concept. In the 1960s, I think it was 1967, the French sociologist Henri Lefebvre published a famous book called The Right to the City. And in that book, Lefebvre was arguing that a democratic society, it's not simply about different structures of government, but it's also about the capacity for citizens to appropriate their living spaces. And by that he meant to be able to reshape things according to how different people want them, rather than having decisions being made somewhere else and being imposed upon people. And a couple of years ago, the prominent US-based social theorist, he's English originally, David Harvey, wrote, and I've put the quote up there, he revisited this idea of the right to the city. And he's saying the freedom to make and remake our cities, and in the process, ourselves, is one of the most precious, yet most neglected, human rights. So I want to take these ideas about the right to the city and put it together with this idea of the media city, the networked city, and say, well, what would it mean to think about the right to the networked city? What kind of software, what kind of media, what kind of interface would we have to think about for the possibilities of horizontal, user-generated, open-source urbanism to emerge? Now, obviously, this is a really big question. I'm doing this for a couple of reasons. One is, I think that the work that I'll show you is really interesting work because the artists are trying to imagine new models for public interaction, for how people relate to other people in a public space or people in even distant public spaces. They're trying to imagine new models of participation, of cooperation. And I think that artists have often been at the forefront of rethinking how media technology might be used. Often the developments that we now take for granted haven't been thought of by the companies. They've been accidents, they've been unexpected. Probably the two biggest examples are email and SMS, the two really popular forms of communication with the internet and with mobile phones. Neither of them were thought about by the designers of the networks. They came about through user developments. SMS in particular, you know, it was a system that was designed in Scandinavia originally. They thought that young people might use it a little bit, but companies like Nokia were completely taken aback by the explosive growth of SMS from around 2002, 2003, and it became a central way of using a phone. The kind of artworks that I'm going to show you some videos of in a minute, I think they belong to quite a different tendency in contemporary art. So I just want to talk a little bit about that first to set the context. I think over the last 10 or 15 years, we've seen a very different sense of how contemporary artists imagine their role. They've shifted from what I would say was an older paradigm of observing something. You see something happening, you observe it, and then you go away and you make your artwork later. It occurs after the event. It's belated. Instead, a lot of artists now want to make work that is contemporaneous with the event, that's happening at the same time, that's taking part in the action. They want to be part of the action. I think the second thing that's happened a lot in the last 15 or 20 years is the open nature of the artwork. Nearly 50 years ago, the Italian semiotician Umberto Eco wrote an essay called The Open Work. And he was talking about the tendency for key modern artists like Bertolt Brecht or Karl Stockhausen to make artworks, but they left specific sections of the work undefined. It was a space for the audience to make a contribution. I think that tendency that Eco was talking about from 100 years ago is much more pronounced in the present. A lot of artists now don't see their work as making an image, a film, an object like a sculpture, but they're making what I'd call a platform for participation. It's a bit like those large-scale video games. The video game doesn't define all the action that can take place. It sets up some possibilities, and then it's all of the people who log into the game and play it who define the action that takes place. Now, the context for a video game, I don't know what the most popular ones in China are, but large-scale games like World of Warcraft, the context can be quite reductive and narrow. But for an artwork, the context can be quite wide open. So people will talk about these as sandboxes, like a sandpit that you can get in and play in and invent new things, as there might have been with a painting. You could say, here's this painting by this artist. It's going to stay the same if it's exhibited in Melbourne or in Shanghai or in Paris or wherever. It's the same painting. We all see the same thing. With these kinds of interactive installations, what happens is going to be different for each audience, because different audiences will bring different things. So I'm going to talk about, first of all, the work of a Mexican-Canadian artist who I know quite well, Rafael Lozano Hema. And I want to show some videos of some of his work, beginning with a piece called Body Movies that was done in 2001, but it's been, I think it was shown in Rotterdam originally, but it's been shown in a number of countries since, including in Hong Kong in 2006. And it's a very interesting piece, and depending on the time, we might look at some of the other pieces he did. Pulse Room in 2007 at the Venice Biennale, and then a piece he did in Melbourne last year called Solar Equation. The other group I want to speak about briefly is a collective based in the UK, in the United Kingdom, called Blast Theory. And you can find material of all these artists on the internet very easily. I could choose a lot of different artists, but I think these ones are good examples for what we need to talk about. And so where you stand in relation to the light will depend how big your shadow is. You could make your shadow 20 meters tall or quite short.
The piece is inspired in part by the work of Dutch painter Samuel van Hoogstraten, mastery of technique for social distancing and from learning and more focus, emphasizing quality of service. His engraving, The Shadow Dance, made in Ramadan in 1635, shows a source of light break the ground level and the shadows of actors taking on demonic or angelic characteristics in heaven.
You probably can't hear Raphael's voice too well, but he's just showing some of the old artworks, this one from 400 years ago that inspired this idea. It's like a modern adaptation of a very old-fashioned idea. What's interesting for me about this work is not so much that the technology it uses, but how it uses the technology. It has these large-scale portraits. People can stand in front of them, but when all the portraits are revealed, it has a tracking system and it immediately alters them. So the work is never fixed. It constructs a space in which people begin to play. I'll drag it forward a little bit and show you. Now, I won't show you the whole video because it would probably take up too much time. But this is an example of an artwork where there is no predetermined set of images that people will watch like there is in a film. What there is a situation and some parameters, some possibilities, and then what happens really depends on what the people there do. And so it will be very different. And it is very different, having talked to Raphael, it's very different in different cities because it depends to some extent on the culture of that city and the particular people who come at that time. One of the things that really interested me about the piece when I first saw it was the way it provides a vehicle for strangers to start to engage with each other. One of the issues that has come up in relation to public space for a long time, and I was talking about Melbourne as a diverse city, but I think in many cities, is people start to get very scared of difference. They start to feel fearful of strangers. Maybe they don't talk to other people so much. They look at their mobile phone, they put on headphones, they seal themselves off. This is a use of digital technology that is going totally the other direction. It puts something up for enjoyment, and then you suddenly see people who don't know each other start to laugh together, start to work out, oh, if three of us stand in a line, we can make a shape of this kind, you know, we can cooperate to do something. It's a very simple idea, but it's also a very clever one. And if you think about this interface, just using the shadow created by your body, it's also very clever because it means lots of people can participate at once, hundreds. It's not like a game where you have to, someone takes a turn on the computer while everybody else watches them do it, you know, driving the car or whatever. Lots of people can do it simultaneously. It's also a nice piece to look at. So if you don't want to stand there and make shadows, you can just watch other people That's fine. You can be relaxed or you can be very active. You can contemplate the piece or you can step forward and you can make a dance. So I'm trying to find a piece at the end of it. I don't know if people can see, but she's saying, you know, it's attractive because you can see yourself and then you can also see others and you start to play like a child. This is a piece that was done more recently. Firstly in Mexico and then at the Venice Biennale. He was the first ever Mexican representative at the Venice Biennale in 2008. And it's a piece called Pulse Room. And it has 100 light bulbs, old-fashioned light bulbs in the room, in a grid. This is set in an old factory. And what happens is that you grab a hold of a sensor and it measures your heartbeat. And each person, as they walk in, they grab this sensor. And the light bulb shows ba-boom, ba-boom, or ba-boom, ba-boom, or whatever, the different intensity and frequency of your heartbeat. I'll show you the piece. Yeah, that wasn't right. That's Raphael. So you get the idea that, you know, you get your heartbeat measured and it shifts it down one, so that eventually the room has 100 different heartbeats going. And it's a very, very beautiful piece because, again, it has this balance between showing You can recognize your own heartbeat, you know, what you as an individual did, but it's part of a collective. It's part of a network. It works them all together. It doesn't average them out. It doesn't have one person and no one else and then the other people. It works them all together. And I think this is a really interesting aspect. It's not an interface that's about making an individual cocoon. And it's not an interface, we see a lot of this with data mining where it averages out tendencies, you know, that Facebook will be data scraping and working out how to market things to people. This is about something quite different. It's about creating an ambient space with a particular quality to do with the people who are there. And they can have an influence over that space. Get that off. I want to show you one last piece of Raphael's. A piece called Solar Equation, and I'll show you this because I had something to do with this piece last year in Melbourne. It was very exciting. An organisation I do some work with, a large-scale public space in the centre of Melbourne, commissioned this new artwork. What Solar Equation is a large balloon, static, that's floating above the ground but tethered with cables. And then it has projections onto it, I think from 4 or 5 projectors, and it looks like the sun. It's a scale model of the sun. It was part of a festival we have, it's just happened again this year, called the Light in Winter. So midwinter festival, we made a little artificial sun. But it's not simply showing you looped video images. What Raphael did was to get footage from NASA, National Aerospace Agency. And then he used complex equations so that each time the footage is being generated differently. So it looks like this burning sun, and then it was also possible for people to interact with it, to change the season of the sun, because it does have different seasons, to alter the noises and so on. But I'll show you a little bit of the video.